Hi, this is AK Wilson, and this is the Streaming Couch. Yay! I'm here with some awesome people. I got Darrell, Peepaw, Teresa, and Kyle. I'm going to give them all an opportunity to be able to introduce themselves and a little bit about who they are and what they do. I'm actually going to start out today I'll start out with Darrell, and then go to Teresa, then TPA, and then Kyle. So, Darrell, if you want to introduce yourself, you got the platform.
Hey, it's good to be back. What's up, guys? I'm Darrell, D-U-R-R-E-L-L. You can follow me on every platform at Darrell Shot It. I do photography, a little bit of music, a little bit of film, a little bit of everything. So just feel free to follow me, and I'll follow you back.
That's awesome. And definitely, like, his Twitter is awesome. Definitely should check it out. Okay, Teresa.
Hello, folks. First time here. Teresa speaking. I am the founder, interviewer, and publisher of online publication allaboutactors.com, where we feature exclusive interviews with some of the greatest actors in the world. We've been doing that since 1989 to the present. So hop on the website and check out some of those interviews and essays. And hopefully I'll have a wonderful time here today and you'll learn some insightful stuff.
And then Teepaw.
Hello, name's Teepaw. My YouTube channel is on Teepaw's Playground. At TPA Wolfric is my Twitter handle. I do a lot of things, namely writing books, doing podcasts like this one, and one day we'll see my movie. See a movie I make in the movie theater.
And Kyle, it's your turn.
Hello, this is Kyle Kleimans. I am an award-winning scriptwriter, an aspiring novelist, and an amateur actor. You can find me on Twitter and IMDb.
Sweetness! And I'm AK Wilson. I've got some pet raccoons, possums, and a bunch of random stuff. And I absolutely love being able to host this. So this week we got to watch Death on the Nile. It's an incredible movie. Somewhere in between. It's got the woman from Wonder Woman. So I guess what we've figured is that we'll kind of go through the beginning. So the beginning scene, you know, we look at it. I felt like the beginning scene was a little bit long, but it's a whole setup of getting to meet the characters, who they are, the drama and all that stuff. They did an incredible job setting up like the background, like of like the time period and a bit about everybody. But how did you guys feel about the character setup and the story development in the first beginning part of the movie?
Well, we should probably stress, first of all, that we watched the latest 2021 version of Death on the Nile and not the original 1970s version.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because this version, the one that came out recently, was an interesting, weird beginning for me, because it's like we start off on a battlefield and we're watching this guy give advice to someone else about how to lead their troops across, which I found was an interesting way to start it, especially in No Man's Land, since, you know, Gal Gadot plays Wonder Woman, and in the Wonder Woman movie that came out a little while before then was doing No Man's Land, so I found that purely ironic for me.
I thought it was interesting, especially the part where he goes and gives the advice to go on the bridge and it goes boom. I was like, oh shit, I didn't expect it coming. What about you guys, Teresa and Kyle? What did you guys think?
Well, for my part, I've been following. So to be clear, the movie was directed by and stars Kenneth Branagh, and he's been one of my favorite filmmakers for a long time. So that's what drew me to this film in the first place. So the thing with Branagh is he's very good at these sweeping shots and well-choreographed action, and this was no exception. If we're talking about the opening, purely the opening scene of the World War One, one thing that struck me was how well it looked like he was a young man, because like I remember the films he was making when he was just like in his late 20s, like Henry V, which is also a war movie. But like the scene in World War One featuring him, I was really impressed by how young he appeared and how seamless it looks. Because I mean, we've all seen examples of uncanny valley appearances of when older actors try to look younger with like CGI. I don't know if it was CGI or what, but the fact that I couldn't tell shows that it was well done.
I
was saying it's a very good effects. Like it was the euthanizing effects that they had, similar to what they did in a lot of films.
I think
nowadays.
Euthanizing is a different word than you mean to say.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. The more you learn, you're here to learn, folks. That's what we do. So,
and what's interesting
is
that
effect. So.
Oh, go ahead, Teresa.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut Darrell off. Go ahead. Continue, Darrell.
Oh, now I was done. It sounded stupid.
What I think is really interesting is that whole prologue of him, you know, back in the days from when he was a so-called young soldier, that was not, as far as I know, not in the novel, and definitely wasn't in the original version of the first film. So, you know, for Branagh to take that kind of a step to, you know, introduce the audience more into Poirot's psyche and backstory and all that kind of stuff, and he did it kind of throughout the whole film, which is pretty interesting, especially when you get to the end of the film and the choice that was made.
Do you feel like it helped improve the movie from the original to the new one?
By original, do you mean like the movie or the book?
Yeah, the original movie. Sorry, I should have specified. Do you think that adding that piece in helped?
I think it established more of like, I think it was just setting a tone in case people forgot of this guy's actual mindset and how he thinks. So I think that putting in a random situation that he experienced before that caused his whole troopers, you know, he saved his whole platoon, and also explains why he wore his mustache. I think it does play an important part, and so I think they were trying to kill two birds with one stone, saying, okay, this guy's smart, this is also something that's going to come into play later, this is why he wears his mustache, which we'll learn more about that as we get into it.
I felt like it was a heartfelt moment, that moment where, you know, he's like, you said you'd marry me before, and then he kind of shows that like moment of like, oh shoot, like look at my face, and then there's like this quiet tension, and I was thinking, I was like, I don't know what I'd do in that situation, but like if you say anything other than like, no, I still love you, it's kind of like, wow, you douche. But like I felt like there was kind of like this, like I wish that there was a little bit more something, because I just felt like it was a really awkward stare off between the two, and then eventually she's finally like, no, we're good. So I was kind of wishing there was, I don't know what would help it, but maybe like a less time in the quiet zone and maybe more of a like slightly faster response, so it didn't seem like she was like super hesitating.
Yeah, I feel like I think the approach people take with revitalizing something new, I mean something old, bringing something old back and making it new, they try to keep the pace of how films are today, and so they just try to keep it fast paced, like okay, boom boom boom, you learn, you know, his smarts, boom, you see his history and his love background. So it wasn't supposed to be like a super huge moment, because that would have taken up more of the story that is to come. So it's there for just for reference reasons. Like
since
he was in love, he wore a mustache because his wife told him to wear a mustache, and she, you know, eventually ended up not being with him, and so yeah.
Since we're talking about that, sorry about before, since we're talking about like the difference between the book and the original film and this film, I confess I haven't read the book and I haven't seen the original film, so I can't speak to the differences, but I have read a bit about what they've changed and whatnot. Allegedly, Agatha Christie never really gave a complex backstory for Poirot, and by all means, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that the love interest and the war scene were not only inaccurate, like not only never talked about, but they were actually contradictory to the canon, because like I think Poirot is actually supposed to be older than he's portrayed in these films. Like he was born much earlier.
Right.
So again, like it's just like, again, like I'll just say it again. Like nowadays, people just use certain canon. They're not going to make the exact same story that happened before. You know, they're not going to rewrite the same story. It's about bringing something new. And so it's about making something happen that hasn't happened before. Because why watch a movie that you've already seen? You've already seen it. You know, years ago, you read a book, you saw a movie about it, that was the same thing, and you're going to watch another movie to do it again? No. So you got to sprucing it up in some type of way. And so, how do you make it only... get a new approach to something old?
Although, if you look at, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say this is the only Death of the Nile I have even seen. This one movie, so same. I have known nothing about the original or the book or anything like that. I only know that there was some war sequence in the beginning that was really well shot, beautifully filmed, and then as I continued with the movie, I was like trying to decide why that was even in the beginning of the movie. So that's pretty much where I was standing.
I'd like to jump back in and say, like, again, so everybody understands before we get more into this, this film should not be compared to any old versions of the stories whatsoever. I'm not going to say 100% whatsoever, but the...
Oh, it absolutely should.
It's not going to be the same. It should
be compared.
Oh, yeah, Teresa. Go ahead, Teresa. Please, I want to hear you. I want to hear you say. Go ahead.
No, it absolutely should.
I was waiting on you, boo-boo. Compared. Let's go.
It should be compared to the original. It should
why
be
should
compared
it?
To the...
Don't but, say it should. Explain why.
Because anytime you take a story or you take a film that's already been made and you remake it, it's inevitable that it's going to be compared. You cannot just walk through a tunnel and expect not to be able to be compared to the previous work. That's just unrealistic.
I have a question, Teresa. I have a question.
I gotta admit that I kind of agree to it, though. Like,
yeah, I was gonna ask her, since she read the novel and seen the old film, is this the same story as those?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's the same story, like line for line, like everything.
Line for line. It's the same. Yeah, it's the same story. It's not line for line. If it was line for line, it would have been a 25-hour movie.
I heard. For my part, from what I've read, I've heard certain characters were condensed into like. Several characters were condensed into like a smaller number of characters.
They were.
For example, yeah. Wow. And like certain backstory was added in. And I think a couple of the plot twists were. Because like that was what interested me. Because like I feel like when it came to this film's flaws, and I'm sure we'll go into those in a bit. But when it came to the film's flaws, I wasn't sure if the flaws belonged to the screenwriter and Branagh or if they belonged to Agatha Christie herself. And by all means, Teresa, correct me if I'm wrong.
And that's the thing, too. And I get where Durrell's coming from with, you know, not wanting to compare it to the other stuff. If we're speaking just in terms of this film and this film alone and its merits as a film, then okay, let's stick with that for the sake of this.
Oh, no. Like, I would love to be able to discuss. I mean, even though, like, some of us haven't seen or read the other ones, I would love to discuss it as a full spectrum. Because I think that it's important to like compare and contrast the one that was done before to the one now, so you can get an idea of the differences and similarities.
Was the original movie the first half of it was like Great Gatsby, where they're just partying nonstop and then partying in pyramids and then having dance offs and having like salsa dances and cutesy stuff like that, and then suddenly the mystery starts about halfway through the movie? Is that like kind of how the original went?
Well, the thing with that though is like that is setting up, so if you have to pay attention to like the little details, because like even I could, like, I mean, I came into this new, and even I could tell that like certain lines and certain things were, certain clues were being dropped in that first hour. But yeah, I do agree that it is. I was surprised how late in the film they introduced the central murder, but at the same time it did, like, it's not like they didn't set up certain things, because they were
called back. Yeah, everything was set up. Yeah.
Yeah, everything was set up. I just kind of found it interesting how the first half of the movie is Great Gatsby.
Does anybody find it like Did anybody find the pace a little slow for them though? For me, I felt
But it's a mystery, right? So if you move too fast, right, you're gonna miss everything that you could, the clues that they throw in there. So I mean, it's, they add everything for a reason. Like when they're in the ballroom and they're dancing, it's the introduction to everybody that's gonna be involved later, and their reasons for being around the main character. Well, Lynette Ridgewater. So that's what all that is. It's the, and the pacing matches again the speed. I think the speed was actually okay, and so it gives you a chance to grab clues as you're going along. Because I approached this movie, when I first saw it, I approached it like it's a mystery movie, so I was looking for everything.
I know, right. And I get that. That's the thing is I'm sitting there like watching the movie and everything, and I get like halfway through it. And I did a couple timestamp checks just because of the fact that I'm like watching it, and I'm like waiting for it to unfold. You know, I just found it interesting how the tone of the movie was so drastically different from like the black and white movie we were watching at the beginning, compared to the partying Great Gatsby movie, to all of a sudden we're in the mystery section of the movie where it's almost like Knives Out, except for with Knives Out, that movie, you know, it felt more intense with the way that movie structured. I'm not like trying to compare movies, but like,
I will say,
it was similar. There were some similar things that were going on, like the way that the detective in that movie does his work versus this detective. And I like the hell out of that part of the movie, like the whole Knives Out part. I like that part. I just felt like it took a while to even get there, and it also felt like a completely different movie.
Knives Out is such a superior movie, though.
Knives Out definitely is the better film, but not to compare the two films.
This movie's just about Death on the Now. I mean, this podcast is about Death on the Now. It's not about now. Okay, we're going to
to bring it back.
Hear our points of view on that, so let's just stay on
track. I do want to say, though, is that, like, if you guys watch it the same way I did, which was I watched the first, right, like, 30 minutes. Right. Yeah, I was watching it right now. I watched the first, like, 30 minutes, and then I was like, this is going really slow, and I had to watch it, so I'm going to fast. We can see, like, towards the end, where there's only, like, 30 minutes left, and I was like, whoa, some chick got, like, just shot a dude in the knee. What the hell? And I had no idea what's going on, so I was like, I'm so confused why they shoot him in the knee.
I think a mystery movie where clues are being dropped is not something you should skip the whole middle.
No, you really.
Yeah, you go fast forward through it. No matter what the flaws are, you don't skip. Otherwise, you will be confused.
Angel, it's like ordering a pizza and only eating the crust.
I felt like it was like a whole different movie. Like, I felt like I got transported from like a very going to like wham, just New World.
not to mention, this movie was layered in red herrings. Like, there were so many red herrings and so many layers to this movie. That's where I say that the movie was ridiculously good at, was the layering.
You guys, like, cinematically, what's you guys' point of view on, like, how it looks, like, the feel and how it looks cinematically and photography-wise?
Right.
I have mixed feelings about how it looked. Like, it certainly has a very lush, colorful, and how do I put it? Like, it's definitely cinematic. Like, in the sense, in a more classic sense, if that makes any sense. 100%. Like, it takes a lot of joy in showing off these very exotic locales, these fancy rooms. It's like taking a leaf out of like Titanic in terms of like magnificence and epic scope. But at the same time, I couldn't be fully sure whether it was CGI or not. Like, for some reason, there was a weird gloss to it that that felt a little off, if that makes sense.
It was painfully obviously CGI. It was terrible looking. I mean,
I guess
it was like you could
see
the cutout lines.
We know who took drama class, right? Yeah.
it just looked awful. It looked absolutely awful. The CGI was so painfully obvious. And it's just like, come on, so you couldn't afford to just go to Egypt and film this stuff?
I'm back and forth on it, though, because I feel like the camera picked up on such beautiful colors. So, like, I do give credit to that, is the color and the, like, I feel like if they were going to make a book off of it, they could make a book of the photography from the movie and be able to get really stunning pictures from it, because I feel like they focused a lot more on the on that part, on that aspect, the cinema aspect, instead of like the plot. Like,
the director of photography.
So you, so you feel like it was more of a visual story than like an actual like vocal like content.
Yeah, but I'm also really, I will be the first to own that I'm major ADD, so movies that move really slow for me, I tend to find myself distracted.
Hey, so, Tom, how do you feel about it, like, cinematically? Okay, Tom, silent. No, I was going to say, like, I agree 100% with Kyle. Like, a lot of the shots...
I didn't know you were talking to me, sorry.
Good Lord. Like, just real quick, like, a lot of the shots are very generic. They have a lot of leading lines and, like, very symmetrical. It's as OCD as the character himself, you know, Hercules.
That's what I have to agree with you there.
It's so very generic. Yeah, very generic shots and very old school types of, like, you know, type of shooting in this. So
one thing I want to bring up that is something that Angel always brings up every time you review anything. Costume design. Costume design, and how that
that was phenomenal. With the director of
the photography. Like, the way that the guy who's carrying the camera around, not, you know, not necessarily Kenneth himself who's directing, but the director of photography, when he's going around shooting all the different sets and all the different people in their costumes and stuff, the visuals were stunning as hell. Like, as Kyle pointed out, like the DP, it was amazing to look at and everything. It's just, you know, the story itself could have used work, but the director of photography was amazing.
I don't blame you on that. Like, how many ways are there to shoot a boat, though?
Well, this is, I mean...
there's tons of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, the
there is, okay, it's, it, elaborate, it is, elaborate. It is, you a, said there's tons of ways. Elaborate.
It is a beautiful-looking movie. I grant you that. I mean, it belonged up on an IMAX screen for a reason. My point is just the bad CGI and the obvious, you know that the characters are in front of a green screen.
Especially when he's doing the whole scene where he's on the pyramid and he's like flying a kite. There's just no way.
Yeah, all that stuff is just so obviously green screened.
I kind of wondered if there was any point. Was there any point to the, like, flying the kite, or was that just kind of there?
It's for the clue.
It was a clue into something else. If you watched it closely, which I highly doubt. But if it was a clue into something else, because they were getting ready to go on to, this is actually segueing into the second part, but they were actually getting ready to go into some tombs, and as they were hurrying along, what's his name? Book and his mother. He was grabbing his mother, and she was saying, "Oh, where's my missing red paint?" And so, and that actually played into that part right there, which led to another part that I can break down. But, like, yeah, and so that's how that played a part in there. It was actually a clue.
How did you guys feel about?
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, since we're talking about the characters now. Is it just me, or were too many of them a little too one note?
Yes.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. They had to be. There was like 13 of them.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, it's a sizable time running length, and they do spend a decent amount of time, like, with these characters, but there was still very little that could be done. Like, even the interview scenes later on during the mystery, they seemed to rush through them. Like, I'm thinking I shouldn't compare, but like the original Murder on the Orient Express with Albert Finney.
Ooh. Like,
which is an excellent film.
It is, yes. And it seemed like the majority of the film was the interviews.
Yes.
Whereas here they crammed the interviews in maybe, I don't know, half an hour. Total? Well, no, that's a little ungenerous. Maybe more like
let's say a good 45 minutes.
Yeah.
A good 40, 45 minutes. Yeah.
So we don't, I don't think we really got to know the characters as well as maybe we could. I don't know.
Yeah.
And yet they did spend a lot of time with them.
It's a 2-hour film again, guys. It's 2-hour movie.
And then even the intros of the characters too, you know, where they always do that obvious thing that Agatha Christie does where she has, you know, some stand-in character is the one who tells Poirot who all the different people are in whatever setting it is in, so that he can learn a little bit about each character as he's, you know, observing them. I remember that.
Again, the challenge was to tell this story that's, again, a book long into and break it down into one film. And to
the problem is, because
they were complaints about that other style, but if the, every movie is the same style, that still brings like that leaves it one dimensional for a certain crowd that'll be into these movies. And so
yeah, that's the problem that I found
I have a question
with the characters.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, no, T-Bug can go first.
I was gonna say, like, the problem I had with a lot of the story structure, like, was that first half of the movie is straight up partying. And second half of the movie is the mystery. And if they'd spent more time, if the movie had spent less time drinking itself and more time building the characters themselves and like giving us more than just single conversations in the interviews, because I feel like we learn more about the characters themselves during the interviews than we did watching them bumble over themselves because they're all jealous of this rich person. And they're all partying and they're all staring at each other and everything. And so I feel like they like info dumped like crazy in the second half of the movie with like all the different interviews and stuff. And you learn about the bedding and the way that they fold things. And like, it shows how smart and observant he is. But as far as like, as a viewer is concerned, I was like watching this and I'm like, the first half of the movie feels like it's one noted. And it feels like just a, like, that's why I compare it to Greg Gatsby, because it's like they spent half the movie partying. And like, I just kind of like wondering where, you know, we were going to find out more about these characters and why they'd be in, like, because I was the most invested I was in like the danger of the characters was with Book, because we spent a lot of time with Book. We spent a lot of time with him and his relationship with the detective guy. And we spent a lot of time with certain other characters, but it felt like a lot of the other ones got left on the cutting room floor as far as the screenwriting part, or at least somehow, you know, somewhere in there.
But that's the whole thing about Agatha Christie's mysteries, are that they're basically all the same plot. It's all, you know, somebody is terrified that they're going to get killed. They are justifiable in thinking so. There are a whole bunch of suspects. And, you know, there's reasons given as to why, you know, they might get murdered or want to murder the person. And then halfway through the book, the person winds up murdered. And then the rest of the book, Poirot spends, you know, finding out who the murderer is. And it's basically murderers. Yes, Kyle, or murderers.
Angel has a fantasy, yes, so she shouldn't be spoiled.
And, you know, I want to be spoiled there.
Dropping clues here and there.
Hang on. Let's let Teresa finish.
So, yeah, and dropping clues here and there kind of thing. And she never really develops characters that much. I mean, Kyle brought out the, you know, the obvious one, which is Poirot, where you never learn any backstory or anything about him. You just know that he is, you know, quote unquote, the world's greatest detective, you know, and that's what he is throughout all of her books. So yeah,
that's why they crammed a small little story in the beginning here.
Kind of like Sherlock Holmes.
Huh?
Like, wouldn't it be kind of like Sherlock Holmes, where it's like the world's greatest detective?
Well, not in the way that, and it's kind of odd, because it's not in the way that Sherlock Holmes is.
I didn't mean it to be weird. I actually haven't seen Sherlock Holmes either, so I just know that they're two very good detectives. That's why I was curious.
There's Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
No, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I've seen a little bit about it, but I do have a question. What did you guys think? So the character of Drew Butler was kind of eh, but like, how did you guys feel about the dialogue of the character? Like, the way that they did the dialogue for the characters, did you guys like it? Or do you guys think that it felt forced? Or how did you guys feel about the dialogue throughout the movie?
There were some funny parts. The best part, of course, was the actual mystery itself. that was the sharpest it was for me.
Are we also, by definition of the dialogue, are we also grading the performances themselves?
I guess so.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah, we could do that. Go for it.
Well, if there's one thing, I mean...
You better say the name I'm thinking about.
Well, I mean, there's lots of names. Like, I think lots of people gave good performances. And, like, Kenneth Branagh, for example. I think he's a very good actor. And I think he does a great job as Poirot. Like, he's clearly a man who's got the weight of... all this weight on his shoulders, not just from his past and his own insecurities, but also from struggling and failing to prevent more people dying, because more than one person dies in this film, safe to say. And so,
not safe range.
I think Branagh did a really good job portraying that as he goes through the film, like as Poirot does. I mean,
yeah, very, and, very agreed.
Yeah, Teresa.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. I love Kenneth Branagh. Like, he's in my top 10 of great actors of this generation. So, yeah, I love everything he does acting-wise. I just wish he would stop trying to make Agatha Christie a franchise.
I actually
appreciate Russell Brand.
Russell Brand surprised me. I did not expect that kind of performance from him.
I know, right? I felt really? Like the strongest performances came from Emma Mackey and Kenneth Branagh. I felt her, like her, you know, being in love situation. I felt like that was.
She did an awesome job.
I felt like that was a very strong one. Just given the point of view that she has, she doesn't have a super megaton of screen time, but. What she does, she actually nails it. And of course, there was those heartfelt moments with Kenneth.
Can I also like bring up the fact that Kenneth Branagh goes from playing all these other different roles he's ever done. He does freaking Lockhart from Harry Potter, and now he's playing this sharp detective guy with the tragic past. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I do have one criticism for Mackie's performance, though, since we're bringing her up.
I sensed it. I could smell it.
Well, this is the thing. Like, looking back on it, I feel like... I don't know. It's to do with her first big scene in the film where she introduces Lynette. I think it was... Was it Lynette?
Yeah, it's Lynette.
Yeah, yeah. Where she introduces Lynette to her fiancé. And... obviously, there's, like, a connection being made between Lynette. Like, they seem to be getting along really well. I don't know. Did anyone suspect the twist before it was introduced?
I think it was meant to be like that.
I don't know. I felt like it was kind of weird. Like, I thought that it was kind of off that. Like, I was all excited, like, oh, they're happy for each other. They're going to be really close. Then, like, instant, like, boop, nope, just kidding. I was kind of like, oh. I'm like kind of disappointed by it already. Not in the movie, but just disappointed that like they didn't stay close and all of a sudden.
With the way those two were asking the detective to try to make sure that, you know, she stays safe and everything, and the way that he was positioned, you know, the way he was positioned with his body language and everything. And then the way he was interacting towards her, towards when they were on the boat, essentially, and before that, like during like the reception and everything like that, I was picking up those clues, like from the body.
I think it's meant to be laid out. It's not to. It's the goal is not to overcomplicate a complicated story. I tell you what, it was complex, but it wasn't complicated. Because they laid it out.
Agree with that, Teresa?
They laid it out for you.
Well, I can't really. You know, say yay or nay because I already knew what was going to happen.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
most of us watched it as new viewers, so we didn't know the storyline or how it goes. So, like, they laid it out slow for us, so like the people who never saw it. So they knew it was going to get complex, but they tried to not complicate it.
And I think that's key in one of these type of
films. I sat there in my chair going, this is going to be fucked up.
I would love to know, though, Teresa, did you feel like there was enough new stuff added to the new one that it didn't make it feel like you were watching the same movie all over again?
Oh, no, it definitely didn't seem like you were watching the same movie from the 70s. Not at all.
I think that was the goal, right?
From the sound of it, it's to its detriment.
That's the goal, to not be the 70s, because it's 2022.
Right, but I mean, but the movie takes place in, what, 1930-something, I guess?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
I mean, you're going to shoot point. That...
I mean, I would be interested for you guys to watch that night. I think it was 1975, that version with Peter Ustinov. I would be interested for you guys to watch that and tell me what you thought of that compared to this.
The people voted on this, so this is, but you know, this we went with the votes. That's literally it.
No, but I'm just saying. Pick up a sequel
to this podcast. Like, what did we think of the 70s one? Now that's a good point, Teresa.
Talking about, we're getting to the point of where it gets to the crime per se, and so like the crime. And did anybody else pick up the pieces before it started to happen? I mean, they're in the tomb, and then somebody drops a rock over them, and then as they get on the boat, you know, the big argument happens, and then what's her name shoots her husband, quote unquote.
Since the way the camera angles refuse to go external shot, because they usually do an external shot during those scenes, and because it was a close-up shot still, I knew they were hiding something.
But so my question was, this is aimed not just for the people who watched this for the first time, but also for Teresa, who clearly has seen, you know, who's read the book and has seen the earlier film. Do you think this story, or this film, depending on, you know, who you are, do you think it would have worked better as a miniseries?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
What about you, Teresa?
What's funny is that there was an entire PBS series based on the Poirot mysteries that David Suchet, how do you pronounce his name? Suchet? Whatever. He played Poirot for years on PBS. It was like Agatha Christie Mysteries, and it was like Poirot, and that was the name of the show. And, you know, they did all these different mysteries and broke them up episodes by episodes.
How'd they go?
I really didn't watch any of them, but, I mean, they lasted for several years, so somebody was looking at them.
I think it'd be incredible if Netflix actually picked it up and, like, redid it. Like, because Netflix is really good about picking up shows that, like, ended up kind of dying out and then redoing them, but reamping them to be modern.
It's PBS, so you should be able to see it, you know, pretty easily.
Yeah. Oh, I just meant, like, that they could, like, redo it and then, like Netflix could, like, reamp it to, like, I guess, like, modern... like a modern like 2022 version.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It would be an interesting miniseries to give. I mean, it could adjust the pacing and give some more, like, rather than like expositioning some of the information that we got. Not to say that like they didn't do a good job with the exposition, because like I've definitely seen worse expositioning done in films before than this. Like, this wasn't the worst case example. But I feel like it could have been improved with a miniseries rather than making it a 2-hour film. If that makes sense.
Exposition does not necessarily be negative, Kyle. It just means.
No, I know. I'm just like saying, like, sometimes. Yeah. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have helped with, like, especially with, like, my kind of attention span. I love these kind of movies in the sense that I do love, like, trying to guess who did it. But for me, I felt like my attention span during a movie where it takes forever for you to just get to, hi, somebody died. It was a mini episode, episodes that maybe I'd be able to sit through it a lot easier than like a full movie. Because for me, I just kept wondering, like, I was like, okay, they're dancing. nope, they're still dancing. Nope, they're still dancing. Oh, look, somebody got shot in the knee. I just wish that there was like, I just wish there was something in between to kind of keep the attention going in that beginning half, because I feel like if it was a TV show, they could kind of add that like little bit of suspenseful moments per episode. So then it's like, okay, cool, like you still got me pretty hooked, and then you go to the next episode.
Wow.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
That, like, I honestly, like, I was walking to the gas station after watching this movie, and granted, I had a, like, headache when I was watching this, so I'm, like, watching this and trying to, like, absorb everything. I was walking to the gas station, and literally, like, even though, like, I know you got Tracy here, who absolutely loves that, you know, knows the original, you got Kyle here, clearly loves Kenneth Branagh, and all sort of stuff. But as someone who's not even invested in it, like, I'm watching this very first time, I'm watching the gas station, I'm like, did they really need that beginning? And then I was like, did they really need, like, the first half of the movie where, like, we don't really know that much about these characters? Like, we don't really get invested in them. And then suddenly we're supposed to, like, act like they're in danger into, like, the middle half. And really the only character that really, like, aside from, of course, the person that got killed in the movie, the main one, that the one the mystery surrounds around, aside from that, and like maybe Book, and then maybe a couple of the characters, aside from that, if anybody else died, I would have been like, oh, they're dead. And so, like, I was like wondering whether or not, like, it could have been woven better in the first half with, like, the interactions and, like, the all the other stuff. Because so far, like, to me, it just looked like a bunch of rich people were mad at each other, and they're like, right, all jealous of this, like, big rich person that has a lot of money. So, speaking of someone like me, I'm like, why the fuck should I care?
That's kind of how I felt, but that last half was incredible.
Yeah, no, I love the last section of the movie. That last section of the movie was intense, especially when, like, he admits to doing two different investigations. He's doing the one that was asked at the beginning, and then he's doing the other one that's the core one for the reason why the movie exists. And you get to see that interplay between him and the one lady's daughter, and then herself, and you get to see a bit more of, like, spicy interplay between him and the mom. And, like, that part I was, like, riveted by. But, like, there was a lot of the stuff in here that I was like, okay, that's happening. Okay, let's keep moving on, I guess.
Right.
Like, some of that development that you skated over there, like, I was pretty impressed with some of the development, like, the reveal that he was having to. I didn't see that one coming, actually.
Well, that's the thing, is they planted it at the beginning. That was one of the good things about the beginning, they planted in there, because he has a few key conversations with people in which the ones asking him about investigating her, like the, I'm not remembering any of their names, by the way, I'm terrible at this because, like, I don't know the characters that well, but I did watch them in the movie. And so he's gassed about investigating the one girl that mommy doesn't want the son to date. And then later on the movie, he's also, of course, asked by the other person. I don't remember which came first, but one of them, basically the two investigations started happening at the beginning. And then as it's carrying on, he doesn't say a whole lot because he's observing. And so while everyone else is partying and everyone else is super involved with them, just in the background watching everybody, and then suddenly you get to see just how observative he is later on in the movie.
I mean, it was, I mean, we are talking about the partying and everything, but it was an engagement, like, celebration. And so, of course, they're going to be, like, cork popping corks and, you know.
It was a wedding.
They rented an entire boat. I mean, of course, they're going to celebrate in there.
Yeah, weren't they married? Yes.
Yeah, they were married.
I want to
know when exactly Gal Gadot knew she was going to play Cleopatra, because, man, they really milked the hell out of that.
I gotta say, they fastball pitched that thing in there. So, I mean, it was, yeah.
That was her audition.
Just sitting on just sitting on a giant ladder or something like that. She's like, I am the queen of whatever. And then, and I'll be honest, that was so awkwardly placed. Just keeping it.
No, I think the most awkward thing in the whole movie was that scene on the rock with her and Armie Hammer, where she's, like, rubbing up against him from behind.
I thought that was pretty funny, but yeah, it was kind of awkward.
It just came out of nowhere, no pun intended. And I was like hoping that The Rock would have hit them at that point.
Yeah, watching this in the theater with my buddies, like that was a part we did laugh at.
Do you guys think that there was, what is something that you guys think that this movie could have done better?
The CGI.
She was hung up on that CGI. She's just like, you better computer generate this better, or just go to Egypt.
I mean, granted, that might have, well, anyway. I mean, I agree the CGI could have been a little better, or they could have, I think they could have benefited from some practical shooting.
Do we know when they shot this? Or was it around 2020?
Oh, that's true, yeah, given the COVID, yeah, given the lockdown, that's true, yeah.
So some people had to still pursue their stories in spite of the pandemic. So, complaining about the CGI is quite irrelevant.
Well,
no, the CGI was bad. When you look at this CGI compared to the CGI that was done in the first film in Murder on the Orient Express, the first remake that he did of this Agatha Christie, hopefully not series, they did a much better job in that. It was snow and ice and a train, and it just looked really, really, really cool.
You know how easy it is to CGI snow?
But it still, it looked really, really cool compared to
CGI a storm at 4 layers.
I hate to disappoint you, Teresa, but Kenneth Branagh has stated, disappointing you given your opinion on this, but Kenneth Branagh has stated he intends very much to spearhead a series about Poirot, a film series.
There you go,
Branagh. Maybe expand it to other Christie characters.
Get your money, Branagh.
Oh, good lord.
Maybe in the third one, too.
It could turn into something marvelous and beautiful, and Teresa may actually love the CGI they use next time.
And you know what the sad part is? Because it's Kenneth Branagh, I will go see it.
Yeah, like, wow. I don't lose any, like, whether the film works or not, it doesn't diminish my view of Branagh.
Oh, not my God.
No, I wouldn't. That's the thing, Kyle, is you can watch a movie that he does where you're like, first act kind of just dragged and dragged, and then the second act got really, really good. You know, even if that is the case, if I see him attached to a role or attached to something, I'll be like, holy shit, it's Kenneth Branagh, it's freaking Professor Lockhart.
As long as it's not Wild Wild West.
Wild West again because he's in it. I mean, that's how much I love him to death. I think my whole thing with this movie was, you know, not just the CGI, but the fact that it wasn't as good as Murder on the Orient Express. Murder on the Express was, he did a really good job with that. And the first Murder on the Orient Express is a fantastic movie. And Albert Finney is like the perfect Poirot. So everybody was like, you know, poo-pooing Branagh and figuring, oh, this thing is not going to work. It's going to be terrible, blah, 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 blah.
You know, one
and
more
it
time.
It actually was a pretty good movie. It was actually really good.
I want to add one more time. This was a very different place in recording and process of making films. This was way before COVID, and this film was shot during COVID, so they faced challenges that made it a totally different experience for actors, and they still pulled out with a film. So I do applaud that.
Yeah, I applaud that.
I understand that, but still, it just bugged me that it wasn't.
You understand it, but you don't.
Murder on the Orient Express.
The thing is, though, the pandemic exempt a film from criticism. And like, exactly. We are allowed to subjective opinions on a film. That's why we're here with this podcast in the first place.
Hi. Exactly. So, question: how did you guys feel about finding out who did it?
I'll tell my experience after y'all. Mine is so short. Mine is so short. I'm telling you. Go ahead, guys.
I take issue with one plot. There's one plot. Okay. If there's I don't like in a film, it's the trope where a single bullet could lead to the film's conclusion. And there was a an egregious example of that in this film, much as it pains me to say it. So, the scene where Book gets shot.
Book!
Like, I mean, because, you know, we're past spoilers at this point. So when Book gets shot, and we know who did it and whatnot, I can only think of, like, you could have also the detective while he was sitting there. You didn't have to shoot Book. You could have shot Poirot. Like, why didn't you just shoot Poirot while you were at it? And nobody would have been able to stop you. Every single person on that boat, meticulously, one by one, and you could have gotten away with it. I mean, between the two of you, you could have killed everyone on the ship who mattered. Gotten away with it instead of letting Poirot corner you all, you know, in the cabin. The
name shouldn't have been Poirot, it should have been Plotro.
Yeah, no,
you killed the plot of the movie. It's about
when she shot
him. Well, she only had that one bullet left, so.
Do we know that she only had one bullet left?
She started shooting at him in the kitchen. What are you talking about?
I know, I'm just teasing.
She had a full clip.
Oh, I'm teasing.
Right. Ah, you're teasing.
Sorry, I took it seriously. I thought it was like, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I was like, what? No.
But I mean, yeah, what do you think of that, though, Teresa? Like, was that there, or is that something the filmmakers made up themselves?
I read the book so long ago, I couldn't really tell you exactly.
Hold on. Go ahead.
What?
You're defending
the
book
a long time.
You defend the book and you don't even remember what's the contents in there?
You think I'm going to remember every single murder in every single Agatha Christie book I've read?
Yes.
Oh, you've read several then.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, I'll calm down.
Come on now.
Cut her some slack, dude. You know,
his name is Darrell.
He's read more than you.
I shoot my shot.
Like, seriously, Agatha Christie books are just like episodes of Law and Order. It's the same plot over and over again, just a different setting.
I'll be honest.
Different people.
Oh man, I couldn't do Law and Order.
Different, you know. Yeah,
apologize to whoever's listening, but I could not do Law and Order. It was literally the same thing every season. It was so gray. Like, that show was so gray, but we're talking about Death on the Nile. Sorry.
Yeah, but then, so then don't read Agatha Christie novels then.
Dun dun.
Bum bum. I have to say though, when she went and killed Book, I was really wondering why another shot wasn't fired, and then they had like that dramatic little beat there, and then he goes to go chase after her, and the whole time I'm like, wait, so she just runs instead of just like, I know there was a couple shots that were shot at him, but like she seemed really good at shooting, so, like standing in place like that, and then all of a sudden she starts shooting like a stormtrooper, and then later on in the movie they're having that little standoff thing, and so apparently, like, I was wondering whether she was trying to protect her reputation at that point, or whether or not, like, she was gonna start just assassinating people because she seemed to be, because he described her as meticulous.
Tom, she was protecting the plot.
Just like turning into a freaking shootout.
That's a plot. Plot should be a character in here that doesn't get killed.
So wait, here's the other thing too. So if we're talking about, like, you know, things that didn't make any sense. So here's Poirot in this film throughout the whole thing, walking with a cane and some kind of, you know, and his obvious limp from, you know, his war injury. But yet when it came time to chase after the killer, he was running up and down the stairs, no cane in sight, jumping over handrails.
I don't remember there being a cane while he was on the boat at all.
Yeah. Yeah, he had his little walking sticky thing.
I guess you could say adrenaline.
There you go. That was an adrenaline shot.
He magically injected himself with a modern day adrenaline shot.
Right. That's the adrenaline.
And then he became a Teen Titan.
Oh my gosh. Please don't. Not now.
Maybe there was a doctor who injected people.
Next week. But like, so the question that Angel asked was about did we find it like easy to figure out who killed it or not. Now I just want to give this, it's so short, I promise you. I was watching it just intently on first go, right? So I was looking for all the clues. I was in the theater and
again, just a note, on the wider screen, it's easy to tell all the difference. You can see everything. It's right in front of your face versus watching it on a TV or iPad. And so, like, in the film, when they're tracking, and I noticed that the red paint missing from the mom's brush kit. And then later on, I saw... Oh, my God. I'm trying to remember it now. All in all, I just remember seeing the paint missing, and then... Once it was getting to, you know, the ex-girlfriend and they were arguing with the man and then she shot him, I was like, oh no, it's them too. They're both doing it. Like, they're both accomplices. There's no way. Because I just paid
the missing paint though. I didn't quite get
because
that
like he had a handkerchief in his hand. Like, in the second she shot him, I was like, oh no, that's fake. Like he definitely took that paint. That's how I was in the theater. I cannot make that up. Like,
you have a good eye.
I was
because, but Annette Bening announced it. She was like, "Where's my crimson red? My crimson red paint is missing."
But that doesn't put all the clues together though. That's just saying that she's missing some red paint. And
the same thing with the scarf. Where's my scarf? My scarf is missing. Somebody took my scarf. It's like, okay, so now we know the scarf is important too.
Yeah, at one point he was carrying it around, and then all of a sudden it just disappeared after they cut back to him. So at one point he got rid of it.
Do you know what? That did go over my head. That, speaking of the scarf, it did actually, I have to admit this, it went over my head that they talked about the scarf muffling the shot, but then also talking about the scorch marks on her face from the gun. So I'm gonna tell you,
Kyle, that part does not make sense. I'm just gonna put it.
No, no, it did. When he explained what happened, I was like, oh, that's what.
I thought the towel would not leave a scorch mark.
No, but it didn't. That's the point. Like there were two shots fired. Remember? There was a missing shot that they didn't take into account. I didn't clue that in.
Talking about going over their head.
So I'm pretty sure
the entire movie. I just want to point out the entire movie went over.
Oh, it shouldn't have. It really shouldn't have.
Yeah,
fast forwarding will have that effect on you.
That is very true. But like, even in watching most of it, I think the problem is I don't really pick up on. I'm horrible at social cues to begin with. That I think that, like, and if you guys are wondering, that Belle is actually the movie. But yeah, no, I just don't pick up on those small subtle cues. So for me, like, I think that a lot of it just kind of went by me.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
a lot of people, but like, I mean, everybody receives it differently. I mean, and so it's shown to a lot big audience, but it's it'll be grasped by, you know, a certain section of that audience.
I have to say though, the thing that really saves the movie for me, like, completely, even if the second half of the movie carried on like the first half did and everything like
please no.
Then, like, if it did, then, like, that's the thing, is the very last half of the movie, especially those climatic scenes, those are what saved the movie for me. Because otherwise I would have just been like, this was boring. Why they have me
like
this?
When he walks into the front of the boat and then he fires one shot in the air and they all lock the doors and lock everybody in there. Like, that's that building suspense moment. Like, everybody's now at gunpoint. Like, he's got the gun facing to everyone. He's like, the killer's in his room and they will stay here.
I feel bad because I feel bad to say it, but that really felt like a trailer shot when he just fires a gun in the air. Like,
dang it, Kyle.
But the crazy thing is that's every Agatha Christie mystery. It's like,
oh,
at
he
some
actually
point,
just he just does that. He just strolls up and fires a shot in the air.
No, not attacked. Fires a shot. At some point, Poirot will get everybody in a room together who's a suspect and not let anybody leave until they find out who the murderer is.
Well, that part makes sense. Like, that part's fine, but like, just the shot of him, like, well, no pun intended, the shot of him walking up, standing in the doorway, and then firing around to get everyone's attention. I felt like they put that in there for this, because I remember seeing the trailer and that being a primary moment. I was like, okay, trailer shot.
I didn't see it. I don't think I even see the trailer. But
I didn't.
The shot was to note everybody. The shot was for all the waiters and everybody to, you know, to let them know, okay, lock it down. So.
Yeah, that's true. That it was a signal. So, like you know, I'm not.
Yeah, it wasn't just to be dramatic. Like, I shot the gun.
Although I did think there, it was a little too melodramatic in the final.
They called it melodramatic, like, sometimes.
Maybe it's just, like, the nature. Like Kenneth
Branagh.
But
that's the thing with the Poirot stories. It's like everybody anticipates, you know, him getting to that point where he gets everybody gathered together in the room and he says, "The murderer is here in this room and they shall not leave until we get the murderer." And then everybody's like, "Yeah, he's gonna get the murderer now." Like, that's
the Poirot impression. Spot on impression right there.
I should be more specific. I mean, the part when the two lovers are revealed, the murderers are revealed, and they've got a, there's a, like a, I don't want to call it a Mexican standoff because it's not really, it's like two sides. There's like basically two different people are pointing guns at them. They're pointing a gun back at the others. That's where I thought it got a little, like, melodramatic because, like,
yeah.
Just stand there and let them fire on each other, you know?
Well, he couldn't run. His leg is busted.
I have a question for you guys. Do you guys feel like the trailer showed all of the best parts, or do you guys feel that, like, the movie had a lot more substance than just those main scenes?
I didn't watch the trailer.
The trailer did not spoil the movie for me. I didn't. I think it was a decent trailer. Definitely kept me on my toes. It's like when I watched the movie, I did not know what to expect. So, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah,
it wasn't one of those terrible trailers where you might as well have watched the whole movie.
I was wondering.
I hate those trailers so much.
Because I felt kind of awkward about it, because for me, I feel like it did give away some pretty big points, but I don't feel like it took away from, like, everything.
Oh yeah.
I don't think I could even tell who the murderer was from the trailer. The murdered person was, like.
They were in the trailer for sure.
Maybe it's been a while since I saw the trailer, but
I never seen the trailer.
Did anyone else get, like, a Sherlock Holmes feel when he's touching that wall, by the way, with the blood, and he's like doing, like, little body motions?
I thought he was like dancing. I thought he was dancing on the wall. He was like, oh, and he leaned on that bad boy. He's like, oh, sashay.
Yeah, like, he's literally turning around and they're all fighting each other in the other room, and he's just touching the wall and everything, and he's like mouthing things to himself. And I'm like, watch this. And I'm like, we gotta get some cool Robert Downey Jr. style, like Sherlock Holmes style sequence right here. And then all of a sudden they stop fighting, and I'm like, oh, okay, that was it. I wonder if they're gonna pay that off.
I mean, yeah, to be fair,
but dead bodies, like, have some respect. She kind of screamed it, like, have some respect. I gotta say, Letitia Wright shouldn't be screaming in certain.
Kyle, what were you gonna say?
Oh, it's okay.
Have to say, though, I really do admire the, like, visual effects and the costumes. Like, they did such an incredible job on it.
I liked that with the room settings. Like, when Brignac got to his room, I love that. That color tone, whatever they did in that room with the colors, I loved that right there. That was amazing looking. And also, whenever he was walking in the ballroom area and they panned from the outside with all the reflections of the mirror, it gave me, like, that was very cool.
The thing that I really, really loved about the movie was the fact that he used so much music from Sister Rosetta Tharpe. You don't hear her music in movies, and to hear so much of it and the other blues stuff that was being played in the film, I loved it.
I did not know who the musician was, but I really liked the music. Like, I really enjoyed it.
I liked the feeling of it.
Yeah, Sister Rosetta Tharpe is, she was an old-time gospel singer, but the thing about her was that she played the electric guitar. So, you know, a lot of people want to credit Chuck Berry and those guys, you know, first starting the whole rock way of playing an electric guitar, and it really wasn't them, it was her.
She was the first?
Rosetta, right? Oh, really?
Yeah, you should just go YouTube her, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and just watch some of her guitar playing. It's just amazing, you know, and obviously she didn't get the credit that she was deserving of because she was A, black, and B, a woman, you know, back in the 1930s, 40s, whatever time period it was that she was playing. And she was just phenomenal at playing electric guitar.
Okay, forget Ballworth. Forget
the
Ballworth
music
mixtape. Forget Ballworth mixtape. Rosetta mixtape lives.
Yes, wow. Because her music really was incredible. Like, especially opening scene and stuff. I thought I really was captivated. And I kind of really appreciated that whole scene where they're like, look, I want my money up front. Because I don't trust that you guys aren't going to not pay us. I thought that was a really cool scene, too.
Yeah.
Rosalie definitely felt like one of the most developed characters in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That now I'm remembering her freaking name, Rosalie and Rosetta. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, she was supposed to be a version of Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
No, that's Salome. Rosalie was her niece. Salome is the Sister Rosetta person.
The one that was playing that was singing.
Oh yeah, no, but I'm talking about her niece slash manager. Like, that was the one who was arguing about the money at the beginning. Like, they're both great characters, for the record. But like, I thought slightly more developed.
Mm. Yeah, no,
not that it matters. They were both very well. They were both highlights of the film.
I love the Rosetta, Sister Rosetta, the one who sings and stuff. She was one of my favorites in the movie.
I liked her lines. Her lines are amazing. Like,
yeah.
Her sparring word choice, like her sparring with our detective guy, that was like one of the biggest highlights for me. Like, when I was watching them together and everything, I was like, oh my god, their chemistry is on fucking fire right now.
I felt like she knew him.
I didn't want to... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just going to give a nod to... I also, one thing that I really appreciate about this movie is the variety of accents that are used. There seems to be a lot of different accents, and I actually really dig it.
See, Kyle, we can bring up good things.
Oh, yeah. British accents, American accents, Israeli accents.
There you go.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, did anybody else create like a short film in your head in which there was like an interaction between her and him at the end of the movie?
I did
like a little short film epilogue.
Didn't do that, but at the beginning. Yeah, I would have done a more fluent transition, though, like as far as introducing everybody. I'd have been like two things at once, kind of crazy. So I mean, it would have not drawn away from the story, but I would have like just made it flow more naturally, per se.
Like have like a short film at the end where like, you know, where it shows him a scarred face and he's sitting at the bar or the place where she was playing music. And she's playing music and stuff on the stage, like have like a short little film afterwards to show the like might actually connect, you know, sort of.
You're saving it for the next film. Come on.
Right.
We need Death on the Nile too.
You would assume that, you know, they probably did hook up because that's why he shaved the mustache and that's why he went back to the club to see her. So that's like the assumption that the audience is supposed to make, which I loved. I loved the ending. I love how it ended like that. Cause like I said, it bookended from the beginning of the film where he, you know, before he had the mustache.
Yeah. It did feel that way. It did feel that way. That is very, very true. However, when I went to the shower afterwards, I was like, my brain is creating an epilogue right now.
So I have. Yeah.
It was nice how they gave Poirot an arc.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was one of the best parts of the movie, was the arc. Because it's like referenced to several times throughout the movie too. Like, one of them talks about him being bombastic and, you know, kind of self-absorbed, conceited and shit, and then, you know, the other part of the movie that, you know, the other guy likes him a lot and stuff like that, but he gets told like twice that he's going to be alone and everything like that, and he already felt that way after he had started opening up to the, you know, the aforementioned, one of the aforementioned killers, and talked about how, you know, he always would feel alone and, you know, used to have love and everything, and then, you know, they sort of bookend the movie the way they did.
You guys, I didn't see it until just now, but like, until you guys pointed it out, that in the beginning, the woman he was in love with caused him to gain the mustache and the persona, but at the end, he's letting go of the persona and the mustache to gain somebody else.
There you go.
There's the arc.
That is a beautiful message. And I would love to mention too, because of the fact that in like past in past podcasts, we've mentioned this for different things, is we got to give some credit too to the lighting and the sound quality, because the lighting is spot on. I don't feel like I have to turn the brightness all the way up, and I don't feel like it's like blinding. But I also appreciate the sound. The sound is spot on, that I don't feel like I have to turn the volume all the way up to try to hear them. And the things happening to voice ratio is like, you don't feel like you have to turn it down when it happens, which is really nice too.
Yeah, no, I agree there.
Yeah, it was, the lighting was very good. I mean, it was very pretty. Like, this, they evened it out very, very well. Especially,
I
even
feel like that's really
the lighting on the characters was really good.
I feel like that's really important because.
What was that, Teresa?
No, I'm just saying it you know, it had that whole 30s glam look to it.
Yes.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I was just thinking is that a lot of movies and shows, they kind of do the opposite of what this movie does, and especially considering the cover, I was surprised because the cover of the movies like looks really dark, so I was kind of surprised when watching this, because I was fully prepared to be watching like a bunch of people standing in the dark 24 like through the entire movie. So when I went and watched it, and most of them are actually in the light a majority of the time, I
Come
felt
on, they're
like
appealing
really...
to DC. This
it is made not me Titan. Feel so happy.
This is not only
but
DC.
It's not just Titans. It's so
know,
many movies and shows,
I'm
though.
Poking fun at the fact that Gal Gadot plays Wonder Woman, and the promotional picture looks like the lighting looks very DC.
Wow.
So dark. Are you sure you're not from those DC movies?
Exactly. They did it as a, you know, attachment. They're like, hey, you guys remember her? The dark chick that looks pretty? Wonder Woman? She's here. She's on a boat. Look at it.
And she'll be Cleopatra next.
I actually didn't expect either. I didn't even recognize Russell Brand.
I did.
Dude, when he showed up, like... I am someone who like knows his comedy work, but I also know him as a podcaster now. And so when I saw him show up, I was like, "Here you are, buddy. I see you." I adore you.
Yeah, I was also so like, I was in the first like half of the movie. I'm like, when is he going to talk? Like, is he going to say? Is he just for to get face? He's just standing around, looking around, and every time something happens, he's just like, "Oh," and then he runs off with the rest. And I'm like, man, he's just here for a face. And then he actually got lines later, and I was like, oh, okay. Well.
And he like got dramatic beats too. Like, I was just like, holy shit, like, this is the most silent I've ever seen Russell Brand in a long time.
I know, right? I haven't seen him in forever.
I've also never seen him in a serious role either. Like, this is the first serious role I've seen him in.
The haircut looked weird for me, but it's part of the character.
He's also a podcaster,
that was
so,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to remind yourself of him?
Yeah, because he looked very different. Like, I'm so used to seeing him with a shaggy mane of black, unkempt hair, all the way down to his shoulders. Like, I'm so used to that image that seeing him so, you know.
And well dressed. He looks clean. He looks like he's bathed in his movie. I mean,
look him up on YouTube and you'll see a hippie. A really smart hippie.
100%. 100%.
Right. I'm aware of his, like, yeah, I'm aware of his, like, usual style and whatnot. So to see him, like, shed it so, like, so completely.
Yeah.
I didn't expect
that. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I didn't know what to expect from his casting. Like, when I knew he was going to be in it, I was like, I don't know what to expect.
And the performance is contained, too. You know, he's not, like, flailing all around and like his normal, usual self.
His normal, usual performance before I even knew him as a YouTuber, I knew him as just the guy who plays out of the dumb roles, or his plays as the, you know, just the sidekick who, you know, does really silly things, or, you know, is comedy, essentially. And then when I saw him on YouTube, I was like, holy shit, this guy is, like, really well worded and, like, really wide vocabulary. And then when I saw him in this movie, I was like, wow, Russell, you changed again.
Yeah, to see him do dramatic was actually pretty refreshing.
Yes.
Yeah, he totally played the straight man in this. There was no comedy whatsoever.
Hey, it's June.
You know what I mean.
Sometimes.
Speaking of this, mystery movie tropes, there was a lot of those reactionary shots. Like, whenever somebody would get killed or something would happen, it's like we're going to, like, at least a half a dozen different close-up reactionary shots of each individual character, and that gets kind of old sometimes.
Yeah, it is funny how it is convenient how they all manage to gather in a perfect sequence, so that, like, the camera manager, like, they all wait their turn before they emerge into the hallway, you know.
Right, they all come either running out of the room or sliding out of the room or poking their head out of the room.
Yeah, as the camera, like, tracks down the boat, like, sidewalk, everybody's popping out one by one.
Yep.
Sometimes it was a little overly choreographed.
One thing that did get to me in the theaters is that, like, is how symmetrical it was shot, and how perfectly in the center of every single room, or, you know, ballroom or table or whatever, was very beautiful in there. Don't get me wrong, I'm a photographer and I love to see these type of things, but it just aggravated me as how much they did it in this film. Yeah, I may be weird. That just may be a weird reaction from me. But
like you said, it was intentionally done.
Yeah, it's intentionally done. Branagh said that, you know, he wanted to shoot it symmetrically like that to showcase the way Poirot has to have everything in balance, and everything has to, you know, look a certain way for him to be able to function. So anytime,
and he was even in the shots that he wasn't in, though.
I mean, right. So. And that was intentional, because remember, the audience in essence is Poirot. You know, we are him trying to figure out this mystery right along with him. So he's the us character.
Well,
so
for
us
him.
To see things the same way he sees them makes sense.
Ah. Yeah, I dug that. I dug that, especially, I'm a photographer as well, and I dug some of that stuff completely, because of the fact that it fit the character, and it fit, like, how he was as a character. Because if you shoot a movie, like, let's say you're watching Batman, and, like, everything's totally non-Batman-like, and, like, as a character, and everything's just weird and stuff, you're gonna end up not liking it. Like, in this movie, he's a detective, he's very miraculous, you know, very meticulous himself, which is why it's nice that the foil, or the bad guy of the movie, was just as meticulous as he was with bad guys. Only really it's just one that's meticulous, the other one's a bumbling idiot who died with her. But you know, he is just as him and the girl were basically mirrored images of each other. So by doing that, and doing that with the camera, and doing that with the sets and everything like that, you know, Branagh went ahead and mirrored the hero and the villain together as characters, and then surrounded them with this canvas that mirrors their character traits as characters. And yeah, we may be the audience and maybe watching it, But we're here with the journey to watch him as a character go through his arc. And in order to do that properly, you have to be able to have those specific elements in place, like the photography, like stuff that's annoying Darrell.
It was just too symmetrical all the time. Not every single shot, you know, I get it, but like, it was just too much. But no, I told with the contrast, I'm a guy who learns from contrast. Thank you for that comparison. So it helped me learn better.
You're very welcome.
So I do have to ask you guys something. And I think I'll just like go down the list, which is I'll start with Darrell, then T-Paul, then Teresa, and then Kyle. Is if you guys had to rate this movie from 1 to 5, what and then why or why not, or why would you choose that rating? And so I'll start with Darrell. 1 to 5 and why?
Okay, 4.9 due to execution. Just the fact that, again, it was a solid idea and they didn't leave anything out. Like, it's rare to see that in films where they have these huge chunks missing, that noticeable chunks missing out of the film that'd be like, you know, oh, that throws the story off for me. But I didn't feel like this story had that. And so just out of execution, you know, of course, how it was shot, cinematography, not having a lot of bad lines, I got to give it a 4.9.
Wow. That's really high. Tipa, what do you think? 1 to 5.
1 to 5? Despite the fact that the second act, or the, no, the first act was the way it was, because the first hour really is the first act to me, and it's a really well-layered first act, really well-layered second act, the execution, like Darrell's saying, and the way that they wrapped everything up with the whole, like, the nuance of the characters and the way that the interactions were with, you know, certain key characters, and the way that they built the beauty of his emotional arc, especially by the end of the movie, because they, you know, one of the themes of the movie is alone. It's, you know, our two main characters who are the villains are not wanting to be alone, which is why they get married in the first place. And in fact, the very first conversation we see between these characters, they're talking about not wanting to be alone. They're talking about their social class. They're talking about who they are as people and everything. And you pick up quite a bit of detail just from that interaction alone. And, you know, to be able to write dialogue like that and actually be able to pick up all those details, you know, in that one conversation at the beginning, and then have it tie in with Perot's emotional arc as a character. And by the time you get to the end of the movie, he's still sitting alone at the end, but he's got a fresh opening, a fresh optimistic opening, because he shaved off his mustache and he sees her. And, you know, there's like this nice quality to the ending. And so because of that, because of all those things, I'd give it a 4.5.
Wow.
Wow. Very impressive.
You can save a movie's first act with the third act and the second act, and the way it's being executed.
Facts.
Teresa, what do you think?
I'm pretty sure I gave it a 3 on Letterboxd.
So is that out of 5 or out of 10?
Out of 5. So I'm giving it a 3 because I gave 1 star for the use of Sister Rosetta Tharpe's music, 1 star for Branna. Branna can stand there and read the phone book, and I would love it. And 1 star for the whole use of Poirot's characterization and building up on it and giving it some kind of, you know, backstory and exposition and pulling the whole thing around full circle from the beginning and the ending. That I really appreciated a lot. And, you know, it's not a bad movie at all, not by any stretch of the imagination. It was just disappointing to me because I was expecting way more. So that's why the rating is lower for me. So I give it a solid 3.
That's what I was going to give it before.
Wait, I'm totally gonna get Kyle's first, but I'm just gonna say is I totally agree with you, Teresa. Kyle, go for it.
I also agree with Teresa. I'm gonna give it a 3 out of 5 as well, because it was not without its flaws, and no, you know, the thing is though, I mean, Teresa hit the nail on the head with the strongest points of this film. They definitely rested with performances like that of Branagh. Some of the other actors were phenomenal. The development of Poirot was, I would say, it was well done, and it was I would also say it was subtly done compared to some of the other elements of the film. The music was great. The scope was good, but as we've already discussed, sometimes it failed to, sometimes failed to match up to its own standards, shall we say. But I don't want to go over all the flaws all over again, because we've definitely spent a good amount of time doing that. But at the same time, I also don't want to take away from the positive traits. So, like I said, it's definitely absolutely like a 3 out of 5 for me.
Kyle gives a rating that I would have given, and I gave the rating Kyle would have given, at least from my point of view of where we were standing in this review.
I totally gotta say that if I were to give it a rating, I would give it somewhere between, like, I hate to do it, but like a 2.5, borderline 3, because I do love the photography of the movie, and I love the, as I said, I appreciate the brightness, I enjoy the character, the, like, actors and actresses. I think that they did a good job in playing their characters, but to be honest, the story was so slow that I am even fully willing to admit on the podcast that I did not watch the whole thing. I couldn't seem to be able to have the attention span to be able to watch it. I feel like, honestly, one of the biggest complaints that I had about this was the fact that it was, like, all very serious, but there was never even I felt like there weren't any moments that lightened up the movie. Like, normally they comedic effect somewhere in any of it, in which kind of lighten the mood. And I feel like it kind of didn't have that, like, anything to, like, ease up. It was just, like, tense and, like, rawr the entire time without any kind of comedic effect. So I kind of felt like there are a lot of things that just weren't, and as I said, a lot of it went over my head, mostly because I couldn't focus enough on it. I did watch a majority of the movie. I think I got to the last, like, 30 minutes and just couldn't, I didn't get to the part where, like, they said who, like, murdered anybody, but I lost interest. I felt guilty about it, but I couldn't finish it.
Russell Brand was actually funny and actually delivered some key one-liners. It would have saved it for Angel.
It really would have. if he had said something happy.
There was also a moment where the book was like he does accuse everybody of doing that, and the detective was like, "But yes, I admit it's a problem." So, like, that little moment that they had was like, it was pretty funny.
I'm just gonna say it just this once, and I won't say it again. I told you we shouldn't have watched this movie.
I'm glad I did watch the movie, though. I'm glad I got the motivation to finally get to this.
Yeah, the people voted. Don't make the people feel bad for voting. People gotta vote.
So. I feel guilty because I genuinely wanted to enjoy this. I just couldn't find it in my heart to fully appreciate its brilliance. And I'm sure that there are people out there who genuinely would, but I haven't really watched mystery movies either.
The whole time I'm walking to the gas station, I'm like, going, Teresa was freaking right. There wasn't much to miss aside for pretty sights. And so
yeah.
It's some pretty intense, like, word sparring in the middle act.
Well,
I don't know. I think that, like, if you're into mystery movies, this could probably be a phenomenal movie.
Oh, it would be a beautiful movie for a lot of people. Like, my mom would have loved it.
But this is where I gotta say
that I'm and I don't hate mystery movies because, to me, the pace is so slow with them. And I know that there are people who appreciate that, but I personally can't sit through a slow movie. So, like, that's why my reading's a little bit lower. I think that even with a mystery, they could have sped it up a little bit in the beginning to be able to keep people's attention. But I feel like the beginning half just really was too slow.
I'm gonna bring it up again. Have you seen Knives Out?
What did you say?
I'm gonna bring it up again. Have you seen Knives Out, Angel?
No.
Do that. Watch that movie, and you will you'll kind of get what I was meaning with some of my earlier comments.
Knives Out is awesome.
Best film. One of the best films of 2019.
Yes.
We'll have to do a
There's your two in one. That's a two in one review for this podcast. Anyway, it's unfortunately
a twofer.
For my part, I have to go soon, so thank you very much for having me, Angel. And it was great to review a movie with all of you.
Absolutely. We're just about to wrap up anyway. We were just going to really quickly announce is that we are doing a Writer's Circle after party after this, as well as we are going to start doing the Writer's Circle Book Studio. Writer's Circle Book Studio, we are grabbing short stories, poems, any type of writing. If you submit a novel, please only you. We will more than happy have the author or writer come join us on the podcast as the
during the announcements.
Does she have an author hiding in the closet somewhere?
Absolutely.
I think so. I heard some struggling.
Yeah.
I heard a door creak.
She's making him finish a book.
I would not be surprised.
Well, in any case, thank you all for listening to us ramble on about Death on the Nile.
Death on the Nile. It's been a ride. A boat ride.
Yep.
There's the funny line for it. That's the funny.
So I'm going to end this with having a writer's circle party. And unfortunately, Kyle Clemens and Teresa actually had to call it. But we do ask everybody who's listening to this if they all check out the www.writerscircleinc.wordpress.com. We do have an incredible website. We have answers. It's a fun website. It gives us all the information about the Writer's Circle, as well as we are starting up our Writer's Circle studio. The book studio is going to be where we review short stories, novels, poems, anything that you have to submit. We will go ahead, we will review it. We'll go ahead and tell you things that you need to work on, things that we really appreciated and liked. And we'll be able to give you a one-on-one question and interview and be able to have you join the streaming couch, which we would think is a lot of fun, and be able to get the experience on what inspired your stuff. So if you have something that you want to submit, just remember that with novels, we do ask that you only submit 3 chapters. It doesn't have to be the first 3, whatever 3 you want. But just leave it at 3 chapters, so that way it's not too hard on the people reviewing it. But we are absolutely 110%. And I'm going to try not to be so critical when it comes to other people's work as I am these movies. These movies are just something special. But as we always do, I do want to give the platform to each of to be able to give us updates on what they're doing and be able to give a shout out of what they want people to check out. But really, I do know that Kyle Clemens, for people to be able to check out his IMDb page. I will be posting in the description his Twitter @ name. If you go there, it is in the description. profile page, but it's also going to be on our website. When it comes to Teresa, she does a phenomenal job with the Film Society, and I believe that you can get more information on that on her Twitter page as well. We will more than likely be posting the website to be able to check it out, or the Twitter account on our website as well. So all our information will be on our website, and we're looking forward to it. So now I'm going to give it over to TPA to make announcements.
Yep. First, number one, definitely check out Kyle. Definitely, he's a screenplay guy. He's a voice actor. He does amazing voice acting, especially when he's doing his Viking stories. You know, he's top notch. He'll even entertain you when he's drunk and play Smeagol, like, and have a Smeagol off with anyone who wants to do a Smeagol. And then you got Teresa, who's amazing with her, you know, film stuff or film society. Anytime I have any questions about story, or anytime I read any of my material in any of the spaces, especially the writing circle, you know, she's always someone that I always bounce off of. Now, that being said, two things I'm working on is I'm working on releasing a series of parts for my prequel story. It was originally going to be just one book. Now I'm basically working on releasing it in a comic book style, in which each part of the story is going to be released as a small novella of sorts, and it'll build into this one big book that will be released later this year in the fall. That being said, I've got you know, Snake of the Dame, which drops on July 15th, and then I've got you know, Storm of Blood, which is dropping August 27th on my birthday. And so I've got more parts that are going to be dropping, as you know, and all, you know, to be dated as far as that goes. But basically, it's going to be this prequel story about Peter and his friends and Trinity, but it's really Trinity's story for this prequel. And thus, some of the stuff that I've got in the pipelines about vampires, fairies, werewolves, a lot of dark fantasy stuff. You're going to even have some Lovecraftian monster stuff, but it's some really cool stuff in the pipeline. And I'm going to be talking to Angel about that, you know, for the writing or the workshop thing. So that's something from me. And I think Darrell's got something to say too.
Of course. Guys, check all of that out. I'm following this guy. You should follow him too. His work is absolutely phenomenal. Again, guys, I just do photography. I work on some music and just a few things here and there. So you can follow me on the social media networks. All of them are Darrell Shot at DurrellShotit, no spaces, no numbers. And guys, connect with us on Twitter. We have a wonderful space called the Writer Circle Space, and we have a lot of fun there. We critique people's work, their stories, and you get a lot of insight that you wouldn't normally get for free. So again, guys, just connect with us there. We're very active, and we're open to anybody. We have a lot of people willing to listen to your stories, willing to listen to your issues if you have them. And so, yeah, just connect with us.
And why would you have a circle without the writing circle? Come on, man.
Why would you have a circle without a writing circle?
And we absolutely are so excited to be able to have the writer's circle. The writer's circle is a way for authors and writers and any kind of artists, honestly, to be able to come and be able to be seen. We understand that the industry is really rough to be able to get your foot in the door. And a lot of times the system's more working against us than it is working with us. So what we are doing is being able to shove a giant freaking foot in that door and saying, nope, we are going to be seen, we are going to be heard, and we're going to get our work out there. So we are absolutely excited to have new people here. Doesn't matter how quirky, doesn't matter like what kind of stuff you write, whether it be erotica or mysteries or horror, or we hit all genres. We love and accept everybody. And when it comes to my projects, you can definitely join in the writer's circle to be able to hear what's going on with my writing. I am writing a book. It is definitely a historical fantasy, very intense, really awesome. And I am hoping within the next year or two to be able to get it released out to the public, so that way they can, somebody can actually read my work. OMG. So that's it on my end. But I want to thank my lovely co-hosts. I want to thank Kyle and Teresa both for joining me this evening. We have been honored to be able to have two such incredible talents, as well as TPA and Darrell. You guys are always here, and you guys are always such incredible energies to be on the podcast. Any final words before you go?
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be able to review movies with Darrell and shoot the shit with Angel and have everybody all together and have us all joke around and everything. Sponsored by Viagra and just continue going. And I just got a few things left to say. Have a week,
guys. Enjoy the comedy. Enjoy the work. Enjoy the art. We're here to connect with you. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. And now we will be shutting down. The Writer's Circle After Party.
See you guys next week.
Have a wonderful night.
Yep. Have-